This is March 4th, 1989. This is Dave Seibold, and the interview that we're going to have is with J. Nyhoff Poole, who was the city treasurer and city clerk, two different duties, treasurer for 2 years, clerk for 35 years, from 1929 to 1966, has a wealth of knowledge about not just the workings of the city hall when he was there, but fun to listen to him reminisce about his youth. So let's tune into the interview at this point. View right now. Grand Avenue, and there was nothing here.
Oh, yeah.
1940.
Oh, yes. This was all beach grass and a whole lot of sand cherries.
Yeah.
Bushes with some blackberry bushes.
Huh. Wild.
All wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it on now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going. That's all right. We're just going to chat. Well,
you know, what it didn't show is where the baseball team field was. The baseball field is where was where the hospital is today.
Oh.
And on the corner there was the a little building for people with smallpox.
Well, I'll be there.
And they had a policeman there part of the time to guard the area from people from going in there and catching the smallpox.
Huh. So it was a quarantine area?
Yes.
And how about mumps and measles and that sort of thing?
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. But I can remember the they had a little place there for people to sit down at the game, and they brought it. Van Heven had its own baseball team, and they played different teams, and one of the big teams that came through was the team from, I think, Beaver Island, the
King Strange group.
Yes. They came in here with a sailboat.
I'll be darned.
Huh. I should remember all that stuff.
Now, what year are you talking about there?
Oh, that must have been 1911,
12. Well, I'll be darned. Huh. You know, in that picture, they do show a ball field, and I couldn't place where the ball field is. I wonder if that's where it was.
That's where it was.
Uh-huh.
Huh. See, there was only one house at the most that I can remember, and that was that would be across from the hospital parking lot on Sheldon Road.
Mm-hmm.
The name doesn't come to me now. I knew the people, I knew the children, and anything in this whole area south of Pinoyer Avenue was pretty much all just wilderness. There was a Dr. Motor. He's supposed to be a sort of a cow doctor. And I can remember he was somewhere where the school is, I think, today.
Mm-hmm. The high school?
Yep.
Well, when did this area begin to develop then? After the war, I suspect.
Yes, after the First World War.
Oh.
Jim Oakes somehow owned all that property, which is now one block east of Sheldon Road.
Mm-hmm.
There was no streets, and he laid out the streets. And the only mistake that Jim made was he made the lots all 50-footers.
Yeah. Well, that was the style then, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I up to this day, when I visit places north of here, or you find out there's whole sections of the town which are all 50-foot lots.
Sure.
And a whole lot of them are half lots. We lived on a half lot. See, the home where I lived the first 18 years of my life was over on corner Jackson and Fifth Street.
Jackson and Fifth.
That
okay.
House is over 100 years old now.
It's still there.
Yeah, oh yes.
Jackson and Fifth. Yeah. I turn on that street a lot. Now, let's see, fifth. All right, now, where is Johnson Grocery?
That's a block...
is that fourth?
West. Yeah, that's 4th Street.
Okay, that's 4th. Okay, now I've got you then. I know where you are. Well, you were down in... You were a North Ender.
Yeah, we were the Swampies. I can remember... Well, that was almost like the Pool's Corner. Grandpa Pool lived on 5th Street, about a block north of us. Across, Uncle Isaac lived a little bit east of us on Jackson Street. Grandpa Nyhoff lived a little bit in that same block.
That's how you got your name then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Grandpa's name was John Nyhoff. My name is John Nyhoff Poole.
Same as his then?
Yep. I was the first boy.
That's why you probably... Did he use J. Nyhoff also?
No.
He went by John.
John. And I would have gone, but there were other Johns.
Oh, I see.
I had cousin John, and this is why it happened, mostly. When I got married, I moved over on Washington Street, east of past store, the two houses east of that, three houses.
Oh, out near Ferry School area?
No, this is on Washington Street.
Oh, on Washington. Yeah. Are you talking about...
Past drugstore.
Past. Yeah, well, that's out in Washington Square, out by Cook Hardware.
Right, that's where
okay.
I bought the house there. Wilson used to live in it. He was the president of the Challenger Machinery Company at that time.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah.
That name
rings nice house.
Yeah.
I remodeled the whole darn thing.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, it, up in the North End, now what year were you born?
1901.
So up in the North End at that time, that was pretty well settled, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was all... Well, that's where all the industry was.
Yeah.
You see, on the end of 5th Street, there was a big, long building. It went all the way from 5th Street west almost to 4th Street. And that's that was... housed, I think Coyman's used it for a feed storage.
Oh, okay.
Because at that time, there was a lot of feed grains, different grains, that came to Grand Haven to be shipped across on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, over on the dock, north of the Grand Trunk Dock, was a big elevator. A big, a tall building,
mm-hmm.
and they could put it in the boat. See,
okay,
they fed it from there.
Where would that be? At the foot of Washington, or
no? That would be on pretty much on the foot of Columbus.
Okay, huh? So they would just pull the cars up there and load them into the hopper, and then down into the boats.
Yeah, and that was all a different kind of a hopper than what you got today, too.
Yeah.
You know, a whole lot of that. I can remember when the D.A. Wells, a two-masted sailboat, came to town, and that was his last trip. And they parked it, what would be the end of about 3rd or 4th Street. At that time, the river, the Grand River at the South Channel, was so clear that when we'd swim across to the island there, we looked down and you could see the clamshells on the bottom of the channel. They put the sewer system in, and the effluents went out between the trestles for the interurban and the old wooden South Channel Bridge. And the sewer came right when it emptied into the river, right at that point.
Uh-huh.
They put that in there, and the sewage came down the river, and from that time on, the South Channel didn't amount to much for fishing and things like that.
What year would that have been?
Oh, that must have been 15, 16.
And was the sewage plant about where it is today?
No, the sewage plant was on the end of Fifth Street. The architect that designed the sewage plant, and of course I was city clerk at the time, so it was at that time we built that in 1925, 30.
And you were clerk then?
Yeah. Huh. And I went to Detroit with him to talk with government engineers and other engineers about the plan for the sewage plant and how it could be enlarged and how what it was going to do. Can you shut it off, man?
Sure. Well, that's natural. That still happens today, doesn't it?
And it made me almost sick when they destroyed the whole thing. It could have been enlarged.
Oh, yeah, I see. But to make the river, you know, you knew it when it was so clear. And the north end kind of fascinates me because the city, as I hear people talk about it, there were the east end guys, and then there were the north end crew. And Ivan Fauchheim, do you know Ivan?
Yep.
He was up there, of course, after your time, but that's his end of town.
Yep.
North end.
I know him real well.
Yeah.
Later on, his folks moved over on the corner of Franklin and Albee, I think it was. And I knew them there.
Okay. That would be out where you were living then, out on the Washington Street.
Pretty quick, out there, yeah, block away.
Yeah.
So I know him real well.
Yeah.
No, I can remember. I can remember when the first cement sidewalks were put in Grand Haven.
What did we have before that?
Wooden.
Huh.
My folks had. We lived on the corner, and we had. You take a 2x, well, I guess it was a 2x8 or 10, and you made two stringers, and then you laid boards across them. Mm-hmm. I can remember.
And was that the responsibility of each homeowner to do that?
Yeah. And one of them had it, and the next one didn't.
Yeah.
There was no control over it.
Yeah.
But I can remember when they had a blockade on the river, up there by the second bridge. The big bridge. It was a swing bridge at that time. And before the east of the bridge were all little icebreakers made. They were pointed like that.
Uh-huh.
And when the water ice would come down there, it was separated so it wouldn't hit the bridge. And they had one on each approach also.
Now you're talking about the Grand River Bridge.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Before the big, the one they got now.
Uh-huh.
That's the third one.
This is the third one.
Yeah, I'd go across there, and at that time it was located and came out where the Holiday Inn is today. It didn't go to Ferrisburg, it went to Spring Lake.
And was that the first bridge, or was that
that's a wooden bridge.
That was the first. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. I don't remember the first one, which one it was, but that's the one I can remember, the old wooden bridge. We'd sit down there fishing. And somebody would whistle for the bridge to open, and I forget the fellow's name. He had a little building there off on the side, and he had a curved bar, iron bar, and he put that into this place right in the middle of the bridge, and then you push on that and walk around it, and that opened the bridge up.
Did it go up?
No, it went. It just turned.
It turned. Okay.
And I'm getting away from what I was going to tell you. They had a big ice jam.
Yes.
And it flooded. The water came so high that it came up to our sidewalk. And Uncle Herm lived half a block over with Grandpa Paul. And he'd take his duck boat and he'd paddle up to our house, tie it on our wooden sidewalk, and then he'd walk along there to the Challenge Refrigerator Company. So, you see, this is what I'm interested in, is when the water is high, there's got to be a place for it to go. We can't channel it all straight into Lake Michigan. There's got to be this, what do they call it, the area where...
Floodplain?
Floodplains. There's got to be a floodplain there. I have somewhere in my desk file an article that shows that the Grand River, before the Grand River, the water from Lake Superior and Huron came down Saginaw Bay and then hit what is now the Grand River, and it was so wide when it got here that it extended from Fredericksburg Shore there, north shore of the Grand,
yes,
all the way to Holland.
And okay, this is before the state is what we know today.
That's right.
Okay. I've heard that, and I've never researched it enough.
I've got the paper. It shows the description of the whole thing, the map of the whole thing.
That is something. You know, back to that bridge. I think you have it right. It was a wooden bridge.
Yep.
And somewhere I saw that the city of Grand Haven actually extends over into a footing where the Holiday Inn is today.
Right.
Is that true?
Right.
There is actually, so Grand Haven is on that peninsula.
It was at that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've vacated it since.
Dr. Hoffman planted all willow trees from the north side of the South Channel Bridge all the way to Spring Lake, and then down Savage Street almost to where the stores are now.
Oh, yeah.
He was the doctor, the Dutch doctor.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember going there and had a headache or something, and he charged me 50 cents for the call. And he laid me on a table that was a handmade table, something made from, I guess. He went to the Arctic Circle.
Yes.
I used to go and talk with him many times. Before he died, he'd call up and say, get Poole to come down, and I got to talk with him. And then I'd sit there by his bed, and Mrs. Hoffman would say, Mr. Poole, now don't get him all excited. He just loves you, and he's got to get this off his mind. And I'd sit there and listen to his story, and he told me about things that happened at the Arctic when he's on this expedition and things like that.
Okay, now you were city clerk at the time.
Yeah.
And are we talking about 30s then, or?
Well, at that time it was closer to the 40s, 45.
Oh.
See, I was city clerk. I was city treasurer for 2 years, city clerk for 35 years, 37 years all told. So I cover a big span there.
Sure. Yeah, you said the 20s. You were clerk in the 20s. When did you become clerk?
I think I was 28.
28.
28, 29.
You were 29 years old. Or you
I
mean?
I was 28 years old, I think, 29.
20,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So now you're talking about
the year difference. I can remember when one of the Crosby boats caught on fire in Lake Michigan and was towed in by another Crosby boat, and they pulled it over there by the Grand Trunk Dock, and I can remember watching them take the bodies off the boat.
That was not the Naomi, was it?
It could have been the Naomi or the Conestoga. I don't know which one it was.
That would have been about
29, 30? Oh, no, that was earlier than that. That was in 1910. Where'd that been?
You know, you were talking about those trees. When you see pictures of the inner urban going into Spring Lake, you see those trees on the side.
Yep.
Pictures. Yep. Those are the trees you're talking about.
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
They were what they call Whitney Willows.
Yep.
And Dr. Hoffma spent some time in Florida and went to college while he was there and studied botany.
Mm.
And that got him off. He used to go out where the factories are today off from Beechtree Street and planted all those pine trees in there. And I'd go down there and I'd help him sort out the trees or what, and he'd say, we've got to continue to reforest the country.
He's smart.
And so he did a lot of that planning there.
Yeah.
Different place in the county too.
Yeah. Now, how the interurban came in about the time you were born, just about 1900. The interurban
must have been a little bit before that. I know, maybe.
Uh-huh.
I rode it every day when I went to business college in Muskegon,
uh-huh.
And I'd catch the interurban at either at on the Jackson and 7th or otherwise 5th and Fulton.
Hmm.
I could hear it, and when it was bad weather, a snowstorm with the likes of that, I'd make a beat it, or run all the way down to the corner of Jackson and get on there, and they got so that I'd say, well, better look down the line and see if I'm coming, so I don't miss it, you know, because I didn't want to miss going there.
And then you'd go where? To Spring Lake?
Yeah.
And then to Fruitport.
Then to Fruitport and exchange and get on a different one that went to Muskegon.
Uh-huh. Now, what bridge did you take? Not the wooden bridge then.
Oh, yes. That was the old wooden bridge.
The wooden bridge. And that took you to the Holiday Inn site.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a big bridge.
And that's where the interurban went across.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
It was, now, on the old South Channel Bridge, the interurban trestle was on the west side of the old bridge.
Okay.
On the other bridge, the interurban was on the right side of it. And it was when you swung the bridge, you swung the interurban tracks and the whole business.
Okay.
The
yeah.
road. When I go over the bridge with a horse and a little wagon, four-wheel wagon, I delivered meat and did things for John Hoffman Meat Market on 6th Street. And I just tap on my horse with a, just touch him and he get him to run. They were Broncos. They'd run all day long. And you just had to keep talking to him all the time. I go over that bridge and it was like a thunder. They were all wooden planks.
Sure.
And go down the line there, you know. And the kids would say, oh, the kids sitting there fishing, when I'd go over that thing, they thought that was swell. Wow, that was a big deal.
That was a big show.
Oh, yeah. Just making run over that bridge.
Now, you delivered all the way to Spring Lake then.
Yeah. I helped kill a cow over there. A yearling or year and a half cow calf, and I took the wagon down there with the butcher,
mm-hmm.
and we slaughtered the cow there, cleaned him up, took him to town, laid him on the barn floor, and took his hide off, dressed him all out, cut him up in quarters, took him to the market, our market, cut him up a couple days later, and steaks and everything. Everything except Hamburg in those days, you had to do it by hand.
Uh-huh.
And now today everything is all by electric motors.
Oh, sure. You know, I was wondering if you delivered over to Spring Lake, how did people get their order to you? There were no telephones.
No, we always picked up the order. I'd go deliver meat in the morning before school, And then I take the order for the next day.
Oh, I see.
And then the next day they got their order, and then I get their order for the next day.
So you had a regular route you went on, probably.
I can remember 1916, 17. We had a bad winter. Oh, it was, I tell you, there's a lot of snow. In fact, the only snow plow we had was a wooden plow that was pulled by the fire department.
The horses.
The horses.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they'd go down and make one path down the main street.
Huh.
And
no paving.
No. Oh no, it was all gravel.
Gravel
or cinders.
Uh huh.
And Mrs. Yerkes, who was the manager of the Akeley Hall.
I was going to say, right there at Akeley, yeah, because the fire barn was right across the
street.
Yes.
And she ordered...
What was her name again?
Yerkes,
okay, yeah.
She ordered, I think it was a pint of milk and 10 cents worth of dried beef or something like that. But we supplied all the meat for the college.
Well, did you?
There,
uh-huh.
At that time. And so when the order came in, I don't know how they got the order, whether we had telephones in or not, I don't remember that. But anyway, in this big storm, I had it delivered down the main street, and Mr. Bolt says, Bud, he says, if you can get up there, I'd like to please you, but don't overdo it. If the horse can't get through it, quit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got as far as William Street, and the horse fell down.
Now you're coming up this way, William's up the hill. Yeah.
Yeah. That was. Then I unloosed the horse from the fill,
uh-huh.
And got him up on his feet. Hitched him back into the harness again, and tied him to the tree in front of Peggy's house. And I walked all the way down to Mrs. Yerkes' house, which is on the corner, just as you turn to go down to the cemetery.
On Lake Avenue, then.
Yep.
That's where, Glen Eden's around the corner.
Yeah. Dr.
Creason?
Right across from Bill Creason.
Yes, okay.
That, way up on the hill.
Oh, right? Yeah. Sure. That's where John Montgomery lived for a while, wasn't it?
I don't know then.
Yeah, something, yeah.
Doctor, he's in with Sickman now. He lives there now. Well, anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I delivered the page and... got a hold of the horse by the bridle and walked him around so he wouldn't get scared until I could get back into the road. The snow was so deep that the horse couldn't walk anymore. And that's how I can remember the day,
yeah,
the approximate day. That
17. Do you remember when you were talking about the pool area up in the north end of town? Did they have lights then?
Yeah, we had street lights.
Well, electric in the home.
Well, they had lamps.
Okay, kerosene or?
Yeah, kerosene.
Uh-huh.
But the street light was a carbon light. And it was strung by a wire between the two poles. And a fellow by the name of, I think it's Garrett Arkema, had a little cart with a ladder, and he went to the pole, climbed up, and then they had these footsteps.
Up on the, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then he had a chain on there, and he dropped the lantern down in the middle of the street, and then he'd put the new carbon in there, and then he'd hook it back up again and pull up, hook it on the pole, and then we got new lights again.
But
that was before they had the incandescent bulbs.
Somebody had to light it every night, or not?
I don't know. I don't know. I otherwise it burned all day. I don't know unless it was on a series that they came in. I know we used to play football under the lake, and the only football we had was a salt sack filled with straw.
I'll be darned. That is good. And probably not enough light, really, to see, but it was enough for you kids.
Yeah.
See. Of course, football was a new game.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And when the teams would go by, the Challenge Refrigerator team, beautiful team, and Dornbus, Fish House team.
Now this is football you're talking about, or baseball?
Football.
Football.
It was football. You couldn't kick it. You could throw it.
Uh-huh.
And we'd play under the lake, and when they'd come by there, when Dornbus had a carloads of salmon come in by boat, they would still be hauling salmon, frozen salmon, to the fish house until 9, 10 o'clock at night. They had such a big load that they were just teams going by all the time unloading the boat.
Now, when you say salmon,
from the Columbia River, isn't
it? Oh, okay.
Seattle area there.
Because the Dornbus is doing the fishing right in the lakes here, too.
Oh, I saw the CJ Boss and the HJ come into in the harbor. They were laying so low that I thought, boy, there's something wrong with that boat. It was so loaded with fish that under the floor, that was all filled up, and the whole deck had boxes of fish on them. All whitefish. And the next day, I'll never forget this either, the next day, the price of fish went down to almost nothing, and the poor guys that went down there and caught them out in the lake didn't like it very well, that the fish price, they thought they would make a lot of money instead of that they didn't get that much out of it.
Well, they probably drove the price down.
Yeah, but having so many fish all at one
exactly.
time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Supply and demand.
Yeah.
You know, the you were talking about the Boss and the Dornbus. Claude Verdine was telling me that those were the two boats that used to go out and take care of the heavy-duty rescue work because the Coast Guard station only had a rowboat.
Right.
And
I can remember when, I think it was the CJ Boss, went to break the ice at the bridge. And he'd run into it, and they were afraid that it was going to swamp him if it came down all of a sudden. So the idea was to get there and give it a bump, but get it reversed and back it out of there.
Yeah.
And they opened a hole there so the water could get through.
Yeah, you mean the torrents of water could come rushing through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were the first, I guess, all steel tugs.
Oh yeah.
And the others were wooden.
Now they were both made right here in Grand Haven.
I think at Johnson Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. What did your dad do?
My dad he made barrels. He was a cooper.
Oh sure. Well, right there in your neighborhood. There
oh, yes. It was the, what's the name of that mill down there? Kilburn. Kilburn,
okay.
Kilburn Mill.
Right.
And the Kilburn barrel factory.
Uh-huh.
And he learned the trade. And when they closed down at the winter time, because there wasn't enough work, evidently, then Dad would go over to the warehouse for the Crosby Gooders and Crosby boats, and he repair all the barrels that came in broke.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the few that could make a whiskey barrel, something that held would hold water or molasses or likes of that. See,
sure.
And he'd repair them most of the time in the Grand Trunk big warehouse there.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Okay, now where would the warehouse? Well, right on the waterfront?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right where the stadium is today.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that.
Yeah.
Right. Huh. And the depot, of course, well, right where it is today.
Yeah. I used to, my wife was working in Grand Rapids at that time. She was a secretary. And I would go get on the Grand Trunk train. And if I didn't have time enough to go and get the ticket before I got on, the conductor wouldn't like that because he had to write out a ticket.
Uh-huh.
And he'd say, I shouldn't do this. I said, you don't have to. I'll ride free. And he already had a big out of ticket for me, see. He said, I can't help that. I haven't got time for everything. I get here and I'm going to go, and here we go.
Now, you could have taken the Interurban or the Grand Trunk.
Yep. Now, I think it was about a dollar or 95 cents, I think, to Grand Rapids and 5 cents for the fare in Grand Rapids on the same Interurban.
Okay.
But they always separated.
The lines were separate, though. Were they or not?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The Interurban had their own, and the railroad had their own.
The Grand Trunk came. The trestle for the Grand Trunk was on the west side of the trestle for the Pier Marquette, going over the South Channel. Both used the big swing bridge, which was the all iron steel bridge, not a wooden bridge.
Okay.
Over by. Just before you got to the Ferrisburg Depot. Then they continued east to where they cut over just a little bit south of Johnson Factory.
Oh, yes.
The old trestle was there. I don't know if it's still there or not. I haven't been around there lately.
I know. The in other words, there were two bridges then going into Spring Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Or wait. Now, at the Jackknife Bridge, and then there was a railroad bridge.
And there's also a pedestrian or road bridge going to Ferrisburg.
Oh, I see.
You came across, you got on the Interurban at Grand Haven, you kind of went all the way to the Ferrisburg little building there, resting place that you could wait for the train. That took you up to the corner of Spring Lake and the road to Ferrisburg. You continued west, and you went over the bridge there. That was the swing bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And into Ferrisburg. Uh-huh. When they put in the bridge that we got today, that bridge was the first one that was on this new way. The rest of them was the old route.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Good heavens.
I can remember going to see my wife, who was born and raised in Ferrisburg. And I was working for the Consumer Power Company, and I usually carried, at night, a .38 revolver. I used to sell a lot of stock, Consumer Power Company stock.
Oh.
If people paid me money, I was going to defend myself and not let them take it away from me.
Mm-hmm.
I came over that night. It was probably 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
Now, this would be the 20s?
Yeah, that would be... that's about right.
Uh-huh.
But, and I got to where the road, one way went to Spring Lake, the other way went to Grand Haven, right on that corner. And I couldn't figure out... Here, a whole pack of dogs came after me, and I didn't know what in the world I was into. And then I saw what it was, a whole bunch of gypsies had parked on that there, and they had they let their dogs out at night. And so I yelled, says, if you don't want dead dogs, you better come over here and get them. So they're getting too close for me. I'd have shot the dogs.
Yeah, I don't blame you. The gypsies in wagons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Huh.
There must have been 10 or 15 of those wagons all tied up there along the Spring Lake Drive.
How colorful that must have been.
It wasn't very colorful to me.
And what did they do? They camped there for a day or so?
Just probably for the night. I don't know.
Where the heck are they heading? Where would they have been going?
They're probably going to go. Probably may have got on the boat that night and went over to the other side. I don't know.
They could have put their wagons on.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And their horses and their,
yeah.
Yeah. They were great traders, you know. They'd trade horses, they'd buy horses, and you never trusted them, really.
No, that's true.
They were people that stole, made a living, selling stuff, trading it.
Still doing it.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
That's right.
But you never see them anymore.
Yeah. You know, we're hopping around a bit, but I'd like to get back to this King Strang, or this group that came in by boat to play ball back about 1911.
Yeah.
Did they have beards and, you know, kind of
like
the house?
I'm pretty sure, yes, they did.
You remember the House of David?
Yeah.
Was it that type of...
outfit, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine that they were a colorful group, and they probably made a living of...
Evidently.
Taking this team around.
Yeah.
House of David did it.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, when I got here, you and Russ Terrell were pretty well running the town.
Yeah, yeah.
This 1940s, 1950s, 60s.
Yeah.
And you went through a lot of errors, but you guys still ran the town.
That's right, yeah. I couldn't get... Bus.
It's Bus Terrell, is it?
Yeah, Bus. He was a fellow that was out in the field all the time checking things.
Uh-huh.
And so he left the responsibility of the operation of the budget and keeping it in order. I'd make a statement and say, we better have a meeting every Monday. Let's get the department heads together. I says, like I used to in Consumers Power Company. I says, every Monday morning... the district manager would say, Mr. Poole, the meeting will be at 9 o'clock. We want everybody there, the head superintendent of the line department, superintendent, the chief clerk at the office there, and the meter readers and delivery people, the whole bunch, we want them in there.
Now, this is Consumers Muskegon.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I'd make a list of all the orders that I had, the third copy of all the orders that went out. Install a meter at this house. Think the meter isn't running right in this house. Had to put up a lamp in this house. Got to put up a line over here and likes that. And I said to these fellows, you better come in the day before. I said, because I tell it just the way it is. If that isn't, you're right on the order here. Why you didn't do it? I'm not going to sit there and defend you. I'm going to say, this is what he wrote on his order there. The district manager says, never was like this before. This is the way it ought to be. And I tried to do that with...
with the city hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't have time for that.
But busted.
Yeah, he was pretty busy with other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did a lot of surveying, you know, and everything himself.
Sure. The we're hearing now about the water lines that Spring Lake is having their problems.
Mm-hmm.
But the original water plant was someplace out near Eagle, Ottawa.
Well, there was one out there. That was the Wiley Waterworks.
Yes. Okay. And those
but that wasn't the city plant. That was a private plant, and. Well, the people used to, they didn't like the water, some of the water that they were getting from the city. And so they switched over to the Wiley line. And then we found out that Wiley hooked into one of our mains, and we were really supplying the water for Wiley Waterworks.
And I was reading, they had
wooden pipe.
Wooden pipe.
Yeah, I saw those pipes.
Isn't that amazing, though?
Yeah. And well, that Wiley Waterworks, they found out later that was just one little area where there was enough gravel or small gravel that was deep enough that you can put a point down there, and if you got enough rain and enough river water, the river got high enough, they had an abundance of water in it.
Huh.
They tested it out and said we could pump it dry enough and it on.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can remember when we put in the new water plant, the one before, the one we're using now is still operating,
yeah,
it's still there.
Right.
And they were going to take the water, they put in the main to the west end of the Escanaba Park there. And they ran that big pipe right up the water's edge, and they were going to take the water out of the river and put that through the filtration plant and prove that it was good to drink. But they had to put so much chemicals into it that the people refused to drink it. And the people would go to Bungard's pump on the corner of Fulton and 4th Street. They had a hardware store there.
Mm-hmm.
And had excellent water. And we'd go down there with a pail, a couple of pails, pump ourselves a pail full of water, and people would be lined up there waiting to chance to get water because they didn't want to drink the water from the plant.
That was a pretty good come on for him.
Yeah.
To have that pump out there.
That's right.
Yeah, good advertising.
Yeah, and they had a place where, of course, the horses, you'd drive up there with a horse and give the horse a drink.
Sure, you had a horse trough right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, those are the days that, you know. I can remember when in the fall, when the fruit came down, a big old umbrella for shade with all the advertising of the different stores.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd sit under those there, and they'd be lined up all clear over to where the church, the Reformed Church is on the corner there, lined up waiting their time to unload at the dock.
Now you're saying from Peach Plains they came.
Yeah. Peach Plains is just before, what's the name of the street you take out? Waverly?
Waverly, yeah.
No, then...
to Mercury?
Mercury Drive.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That whole area back there was Peach Plains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and that was all done by fellas. If they were jumbo baskets, they'd have two of them on each side, and they'd take it and walk it all the way down, and then onto the boat, and load the boats up. I can also remember when they had such a big crop, they took them from Fruitport. The boats that went to Fruitport were all filled with different fruits and vegetables. And the tugs, big gravel tugs that used to come down, they would be loaded, and they have a tug pulling all the way down to the boat and unloading them down there. I saw that. It was an important place here, Michigan, you know.
Oh, yes.
The whole area here came through here. All the people that wanted to go to Chicago or to Milwaukee, we had both the Milwaukee and Chicago boats. They'd be lined up there, coming in on the interurban, on the Grand Trunk train, great big long train, just full of passengers coming down there.
Yeah.
And after they got their tickets for the berth or whatever they're going to have going across, they'd all get out on the street and went down the street. The stores were all open at night,
and
it was a busy place.
Yeah.
And Wesson's ice cream store. Oh boy! For 10 cents you'd get a buffalo.
A buffalo.
Buffalo, great big sundae, you know. Or Pete DeBoof.
Yeah. Now, DeBoof is the one, where was his place?
It was the middle of the block, pretty much, between second and third.
Uh-huh. Kirk's Camera. is there now. Kirk's Camera and the Office Supply.
Yep, yeah.
Of course, that was the Tribune where the Office Supply is.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could remember when the Tribune was being printed there, I bet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember. What was his name again? Kirk? I bring the copy down there, you know, for the city.
Yeah.
And we sit there and talk about politics going on there. What did you think about what they said? Mrs. Boss was a reporter, and she'd come into the office and she'd want to say, "Well, I'll tell you, what are they going to do at the night pool?" Well, I said, "You better come down here and in." I said, "I'm getting in trouble." I said, "I can't tell you what they're going to do because I don't know what they're going to do. But these are things that I think they're going to talk about." And she'd want to get a scoop on the Grand Rapids Press.
Oh, sure. When did they move to their present plant? Do you remember that? The Tribune?
No, I don't remember that day. That's a long, long time ago.
But you're talking about going down to the Washington Street office, or are you talking about going to the office where they are now?
Both of them. I went to both of them. Mm-hmm. I was also in for some, I didn't know what to do at the time when Heap was mayor.
Oh, yeah. And you were city clerk then.
Yeah.
Depression days.
Yes. Oh, it was, we'd sit in the office there at night trying to feed people. People come down there and didn't have a speck of coal in the bin. Or didn't have any food left there, and they'd have to go through the whole system how'd you get that? Didn't you save anything? Who can you go? Does your church help you with anything like this? You know, and a bunch of questions. Be midnight sometimes before we get out of there. Mm. Well, Mr. Heap didn't pay his taxes. He was I was city treasurer. I was responsible for collecting all personal taxes. You could not return them like you could real estate. And so I went to see Mr. Heap and he said, "Mr. Poole, I know all about the law." He says, "Yes, I know you studied law. But I said, the question is, I cannot return the personal taxes of your factory to the state for collection. This is my duty. I'm bonded to collect that, and I'm going to collect it." And so I said, "When can we make an appointment?" He says, "Could you come in probably tomorrow or the next day?" I said, "Yeah, I'll accommodate that, Mr. Heap. Glad to do it."
Was he mayor at the time?
Yeah. And the next day he went in bankruptcy and I didn't get it.
I've never heard that story.
No,
he went into bankruptcy.
Yeah. But I don't know right after that I think he kind of gave up he was a Democrat. He was quite radical. But Charlie Meisner, I think. I went to Charlie Meisner. Heap says, "Poole, will you get the council together and we have to have a meeting tonight?" I says, "How can we?" He says, "We'll have a meeting right here in the jail." "Oh no, Mr. Heap," I says, "the charter specifies that all meetings will be in the city hall. And they can't move it to the city hall over here, so it'll have to be in the city hall."
Was he in jail?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was in jail on a body execution.
Uh-huh.
Something he said, or I don't know what it was. I think it was Lily that put him in jail.
So you didn't have the meeting.
So I went to Charlie Meisner and said, "Charlie, what do we do?" And he said, "Well, just tell the old boy that there's nothing you can do. If they want a meeting, we'll have it in the city hall, otherwise there won't be a meeting." So I said, "Well, I have to call the council members down." So I went and called them all up and And he said, I wouldn't have a meeting that night.
Mm.
But a lot of funny things happen, you know.
Oh, Lionel Heap, I've heard stories about him, yeah.
And still, he could be just as nice as could be as foolish as he wanted to get rid of me as city clerk. And I forget the fellow that he wanted before was a Democrat. He had a hardware store on the north side of Washington Street there. Well, I can't think of the name of the store. It wasn't Bocce. It went in a nice block. And he had a couple of council members also thought that, well, to the winner gets the spoils, you know, so we'd put up anybody we want down there, but the rest of them said, well, here, this is the first time that we got statements that we understood, because it says, Poole is a bookkeeper, an accountant, and he is supplying us with the information we never had before.
Tell me this, did they run on party tickets for mayor, or just...
No, it was...
nonpartisan, but he still was a Democrat.
Yeah, everybody knew that.
And it was a Republican, it always has been Republican.
So, it was a... Well,
but those were Depression days, and that's when Roosevelt got in.
Oh, yes.
And,
got to give Heap credit for a lot of things. He got interested in gardening. And so we acquired, he said, who owns, where can we get property to have a municipal garden where people can go, we can offer them so many square feet of place where they can grow their own carrots and vegetables and the likes of that. Well, I said, I'll tell you, there's Johnson's Island. I don't know what it was ever used for before, unless that it was a boom, a place for boats, for the logs when they came down. So we'll go down there and take a look at it. Well, oh, he got all excited about that. And we went over there and looked at the island and got somebody to go down there, and I think they had a spade out there, they're full of cattails and big clumps, you know, like that.
Now, where would it be? Where is Johnson Island? It's in the middle of the river, I gather.
Yeah, it faces Spring Lake and faces the tannery, right between the two.
Okay, I know about where you mean then. But you had to row out to it?
Oh, yes. So, people rowed out there. And my heavens, the stuff grew so, got huge. Oh, tomato plants, great big plants there, full of them, but they stole from each other, and they never, if they had one coming right, they had to stay there almost all night in order to know that you're going to get one off your own bush.
That was, what now, 31, 2, 3, the Depression days?
Yeah, 30s there, right now, 31. And
did it last long?
The Depression?
Well, I meant the
island,
the gardens.
Oh yes, they brought it. We then rented somebody, gave somebody a little fee for with a big old boat, and they rowed up the island. They loaded it up with stuff. It was just terrific. Then we rented the. The old pen factory, Michael George Pen Company, which is on the right next to the Wiley Waterworks, and we used that basement there, and bought a steam cooking outfit, and the women went down there and cleaned all the vegetables, and different fellows helped also, and they put it all into cans, or anybody that wanted to go down there and put it in their own cans and glass.
Jars.
That place would just be full of that stuff that they grew on an island there.
That's something, though.
That saved the city quite a lot of money. So they were even going to try to do some with meat, but I don't think that much of a success. But you got to give Mr. Heap. He was a cripple. He I think he got hurt diving when he was a boy.
Uh-huh.
And he had a limp and had something under his shoe that...
elevated him up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, but he got out on the island. He had to see that, and so they wrote him over. I think Hank Greenberg did. He was for all for it, too.
Uh-huh.
Get the people something to earn their own way.
Sure.
But, I can remember people came in and said, we'll give you our house, give you the deed to our property, if you'll take care of us so that we don't die before. So we took any number of houses that we took over, and if we could sell them later on and there was a residue over what we thought it cost us, then we'd pay them some of it back. Well, I tell you, I set up different accounts for everybody and his brother, and we charged them for the seed that they wanted to plant, charged them, but we never collected for it. Thousands of dollars, I guess.
But when you said they would turn over their house to the city, that was in lieu of taxes, was it?
Well, that was for some help. Food.
I see.
Food and whatever they were in need of at that time.
Uh-huh.
They were elderly people and needed help.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to... I was a youngster during the Depression days and really didn't feel the force of it.
I saw them people coming up there and begging for then when Heap says it isn't fair, he says, to go down there and bring a tub full of coal to anybody, he says, well, we should fill the bins. We filled up a number of bins, and then we found out that all the relatives were getting the coal from them too. So we cut that out.
Well, he had some socialist attitudes about the way to run government.
He was very much. He had a library in his home there on the. I don't know, outside of the public library, where there were more books than that fellow had that he evidently read.
Uh-huh.
And a whole lot of it was on socialism.
Mm, yes. Sounds like it would be.
Yeah.
So what finally happened to him? Sent him to jail. He got out.
Yeah. He was defeated in the election. And that's all that left. His son probably is living today. In college at the time, I believe. And he got all excited about Akeley Hall, converting it into a city hall and a police department, fire department.
Uh-huh.
And he drew up all the plans, what they could do. The dance floor on the third floor was going to be the council chamber.
Not a bad idea.
And the basement area was going to be cut out there to put the fire trucks under there. And the police department, everything in that building, the city hall, the whole building that wouldn't have been going. Had that been done, that we'd have had a building, a historical building.
Absolutely. Now that would have been all along Fifth Street. Just where did it go? Let's see.
Columbus Street.
Columbus.
Yep.
Yeah.
Halfway to Sixth Street.
Uh-huh. And then up along Fifth Street too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Must have been a beautiful building. I've never seen a good picture of that.
I think it was I think it was like sandstone.
Mm-hmm.
There were big blocks at the basement there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went through the basement to deliver the meat, it was a dark, like in a dungeon. I could almost had trouble trying to find my way to the kitchen.
When did that building, when was it built?
I don't know when it was built. I remember when he took it down, it was, to me, it was a sad day.
Bad, really. And when was torn down, when, in the 30s?
Yeah, it was a WPPA?
WPA, uh-huh.
Project, I think.
Sure.
Took it down.
Too bad.
And I just thought that they would have used all the brick that was there to build the city hall, but
sure.
I don't remember that at all. L. Emery was the fellow that did most of the work building the city hall. He was in charge of it, and I think the fire station also, the old fire station.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, the Akeley Hall kind of fascinates me because it really was a finishing school, or a, what would it have been?
We always thought it was a school for girls whose parents couldn't control them.
Uh-huh.
But
rich kids.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And but I don't know, because when they went down the street, the teacher was always there, and there was no such thing as flirting with the boys along the way.
Uh-huh.
But I'm told, I never tried it, so I don't know if it's true or not, that fellows would got a good heavy rope, and they fixed it and showed the girls how to tie that one end of it over around the bedpost.
Mm-hmm.
And then got the rope out, and the post could skin itself up there. But I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, it must have been a pretty classic operation.
Oh, yes. I think that there were days when certain fellows were invited to dances up mm-hmm. there on the third floor, and I think that some of those, probably the hardbacks, to watch that.
Sure.
Because one of the Mrs. Harbeck was a teacher there for a while.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
Olive Harbeck.
Harbeck's wife.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Wonder what her maiden name was. I've got to ask her.
I don't think it was Olive. I think she had a sister, Olive, I think. She had, her sister married Philip, worked at the tannery. What was his name? I think he's still living.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I hate it. Mention names really on this thing.
Oh, that's all right. Kevin's. I don't think, although this will, 20 years from now, when we're both gone, who's going to care about who said what?
Well, I won't be here 20 years from now.
Me either. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope I am, though. Let's see, I'm 62 now.
I'd be 88.
You're 88,
the 3rd of April.
Yeah. Born in 1901, so. Yeah. You know, the thing that fascinates me, and I keep trying to impress this upon people, when you were born, there were no cars,
right.
No airplanes, no indoor plumbing, very little indoor plumbing.
Very, very little.
Yeah. No electricity, no telephones. And you came through all of this technology. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. More things have happened. I lived through the First World War.
Yeah.
Second World War.
You didn't go to the First World War.
No.
You were too young. You were about 17 or 18.
Yeah, I was 16.
Uh-huh.
And I went down. The band came to town, the Navy band, Army band. They worked it up in Central Park. They had a bandstand there. And, oh boy, they really could play. And the next day, a bunch of us went down to Robin's office, where they were going to take enlistments.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the end of the line, the sergeant or whoever it was looked down the line and kind of said, "Will the last five or six fellows on the end of the line go home and have Mama change their pants and come back next year?"
He talked to you?
I never tried again.
16. You were 16
yeah,
at the time.
Yeah.
Boy, that made you feel that tall.
I really grew up there. So then I turned around and joined the Home Guard.
Okay.
That was, I think Dykema was the captain or major at that time. We trained in the armory.
Uh-huh.
And in the old armory, Dad says, son, he says, you got to come along with me. We're going to a political meeting. He was a Democrat at the time. Mm-hmm. He says, Brian is going to be there. And I'm all for Brian. And so I went along with him, and Dad said, went up to Brian and said, I want you to meet my son. And I shook hands with Brian.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll be darned. Now, when you say the old armory,
yep.
It's
a wooden armory. Is that
it was wood, okay. And then that burned down, in the but at the same site, the
yep.
present armory is
that's
built.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Now, we're talking 19...
Nine?
Okay. Huh. Yeah, that was some doing to have a man like that, some stature, come to town.
You bet.
Uh-huh.
And he's a good speaker, too.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. he was a remarkable orator.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you finally retired when? 1966.
I was 65. Had a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
I was in the hospital. Went back for a month or so and showed Bill where stuff was, what did they do, and everyone died.
Bill,
Swear.
Oh, Bill Swear. Oh, sure. Well, who were the mayors? You had Heap. You probably can't remember them all, but...
Heap, Verdine, Bill Verdine.
Oh, Bill Verdine.
Bill Verdine.
Would that have been Claude's what? Father?
Uncle.
Uncle, okay.
Yeah, Dr. Verdine's father.
I see. John Verdine.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I said, from what I can hear, Bill, he's going to give you a run for your life. And he says, I don't care. He says, I'm going fishing. Well, I said, don't blame it on anybody else. I told you, you better get out here and see some of these people. And he lost by just a few votes.
Okay.
And Harold Westerhoff says, Harold, says, if I hear the rumblings, I think you better get out and do a little handshaking, or get around and get yourself more fame. Oh, no, he says, I think I did a good job. And he says, in fact, he says, I went and got this fellow to run against me, John Racine. John Racine was elected.
I'll be there.
And so I said, I better not tip these people off. Because how do you know? I said, well, I can hear stuff.
Well, yeah, you feel it. I remember that's the way that Babcock used to fix the school elections.
Oh, yeah.
He'd watch the people come in the door, and all of a sudden he said, we better get some more yes votes.
Yeah. I can remember... when the big election was in 1930, I think, when who ran for office? Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, yes, right.
And Roosevelt was a very, very popular guy.
Mm-hmm.
I almost voted Democratic that time. And I thought, but that was the first big election that I handled, and on a national scale. And my heavens, man, the number of ballots that we had, state propositions. Federal things, all on great big paper ballots.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And, you got a whole handful of them, and in order to, and you sit there trying, and the booths weren't big enough, and they couldn't lay them, the shelf wasn't big enough, and they were having an awful time with it. So I said, well, polls close at 8 o'clock, but anybody that's in line at 8 o'clock, I'll have a policeman on the end of every line in town, so everybody that wants to can vote. nobody will be deprived of a vote. Because everybody's saying, they'll never be able to get them all done through. It's going to be a mess. And all that. So there won't be a mess if I'm going to handle it. And I got up. There was so many people in the fifth precinct that was in the Michael George building at that time.
Now where's fifth?
The fifth precinct was the easternmost.
East end.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I hired people as they came in and said, I'll put you on the roll right now. I said, will you start folding ballots? I said, I've got to have more ballots. And trying to rest, get these people to get in there. I stayed there and I both folded ballots in different precincts in order to keep them caught up. When they got all through at 8 o'clock at night, everybody was so pooped out that they filled Roseback, he practically went to sleep or painted right by at the desk down there. I took him home and got somebody to take his place. At 8 o'clock the next morning, I got home.
Counting up your
counted, counted ballots all night long. And I fed them coffee and hamburgers all night long. Somebody, my brother, helped a lot of times. He said, go down so, charge it to the city and bring home some food for these fellows. I've got to keep them awake. And I got home the next morning after being up all night. And I can remember Westerhoff says, I don't want to see you tomorrow morning, Poole. You've been here. It's remarkable what you've done. He said, it's beautiful. We won the election. It's a fair election. Everybody, you saw, like you said, everybody will have a chance. And everybody did have a chance. Nobody was turned down.
Yeah.
I think that 95% of the registered voters voted at that election.
Wow.
That was the most I ever had.
That's amazing. When you consider today at a big election, if we get 70 out.
Yeah.
That's a big election.
Oh, yes. And
well, people are concerned.
Oh, yes.
Depression days,
yeah.
They're voting their pocketbook and their existence.
That's right.
Yeah.
Somebody to spark up the whole country.
Yeah.
And that's why we got to give credit to anybody that run for office and get an idea in his head.
You bet. Yeah. Politics, people like to think of it as a dirty word, but it's got to be.
And to me, I think it was instilled in us at home because Dad was interested in politics, and he read all he could on it and tell us kids, and I grabbed it harder than the other ones because I made it kind of a vocation of my life.
Yeah, you sure did.
I
did you have to run for? Yeah, you ran for office each time.
Yeah, I ran for city treasurer a year, for 1 year at a time. And then I never ran for clerk. They saw the work that I did, and in the office there with my reports and the information that I was supplying the council on how they'd say, how can we have we got enough money to do this? Nope. Just remember this: we are not going to end up spending more than what we can take in. I'll see to it. I'll tell you when we're hitting the danger point. But beyond that, I don't want any part of it. Same way when I made up the budgets, I would say, now, this is a budget that will work. I guarantee this budget is what you need. If you change anything, you're changing my affairs. I don't have any responsibility. I said, this is complete with the exception of wages. If I use the present wages, if you're going to raise wages, you throw the whole thing out of balance. But if you do, I've got another cushion built in here. I'll tell you about that sometime later on. And that was a contingency fund.
Uh-huh. and the contingency fund probably amounted to $5,000 back in those days.
Not very much.
Yeah.
I think the first budget I made was $97,000.
Ooh. Well, that was
for the city.
Yeah, that was. Now you're talking about the 30s, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Now it's millions.
Oh yeah. Good heavens, yes.
Same way with the county. I made up the county budget. And
you made that up?
Yeah. Okay. I was a member of the Board of Supervisors, but I was also a member of the county commissioner.
Oh, I didn't realize. I'd forgotten that.
And so I made up this budget. They were always in. This is the big deal. We had 31 members on the Board of Supervisors. And they all had to come back to make the budget, see, when the budget was submitted. That meant sometimes a 1 or 2 weeks job coming down there, and they got paid at that time, I think, $5 for a meeting. But they all liked that little
sure.
extra meeting. They,
yeah.
And so I made up this budget, and I worked it all. After I got it all made up, I did just like I did in the city. I said, this will work. I guarantee you. You change any of these figures here, and I said, you relieve me of the responsibility. But if you change anything, you can change only the salaries. I haven't done anything about that. Well, I got a plug in there, then I'll let you know how far you can go. And I worked it up into percentages, and when I presented the budget to them, it took one day. I said, here, this budget, this is the budget. Last year's budget was so much. That is, the increase is 3%. The increase, I decreased it by 5%. And I gave them the percentages. The budget went through like a...
I'll be dead.
And after that, they never tried it again. And they like this extra work, income from attending meetings. You know?
Sure, sure. Now, you were the city's appointed member to the county.
The supervisor, the assessor, myself, the mayor, and I think the city manager, four of us representing the city of Grand Haven.
And you were all on the Board of Commissioners?
Yeah.
Oh, didn't realize that. Yeah.
But besides the one that was elected, there was one unelected, the rest of us were all by charter.
Automatically appointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I served on two charter commissions. We wrote the charter, City of Grand Haven. We wrote the first one. And they were all enthused how easy it was going to pass. I said, I'll tell you that it won't pass. And I can tell you why it won't pass, but I won't do that. You think it's going to pass, I say it won't pass. And it didn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, what do we do now? I said, we have to go through the whole process again. I said, we have to appoint all new members to the charter study committee. And
clean slate.
Yeah, which
yeah.
I was the only one, I guess, that was because I was clerk of the other one and clerk of this one here. And then I told them, I said, they raised the amount that the county, that the council could spend for taxes. They increased it up to 20%. And I said, it's always been 15%, and on the basis of that little raise, wait until the public hears. If you want to spend more money than what you're going to have, they're going to pay more taxes.
That was it.
The next one went through like nobody.
Oh, it did?
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
And what, you held it at 15?
Then it held it at 15.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. Money talks.
Oh, yes. Even today.
Yeah, you bet it does.
Yes, sirree. I think President Bush might have had more difficulty if he wanted to raise the income.
Oh, yes.
He'd never probably got elected.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No new taxes. Well, listen, it's almost noon. You better get to where you're going, or this has been fun.
Well, it's amazing what a man's mind can retain.
Yeah.
Over all these years.
I know that, yeah.
For instance, I can remember walking down the road where the Grand Trunk came into Grand Haven, and when the depot was on the other side of the river.
Oh, you're kidding!
And I can also remember the trestle that went across the sag into Ferrisburg, and I sat on there and waiting for ducks to fly over. Sat on the trestle down there with my gun. And all I sat there and fished off that old trestle.
That is something. Now, I've never heard anyone comment on that.
That's
the sag area. That's,
you'll have to spend the day here sometime.
Yeah.
You'll never get talked out.
Now, the depot was no longer functioning, but it was still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it had moved over to this side of the river.
And I sat under that building when they put it on piles by the old... north or the old hardwood boom. I'd like to have a whole tape of the sag where we hunt ducks.
Yeah.
The hardwood boom.
Now where was that?
Right back of the where the light plant is today.
Uh-huh.
The Imlaw's boom, the Boyden's boom, the Baker's boom, all of those places that I hunted duck or fished in them.
Uh-huh.
And the changes back between the Imlaw's boom and the hardwood boom were three bridges. They took you to the mechanics shipyard.
Hmm.
And I sat on those and caught bluegills, good big bluegills off the bridge.
Now where was the shipyard?
Right where I can always. That would be...
South Channel?
No, right in the main river.
Oh, okay.
Right north of the light plant.
Okay. On the island?
Yep.
Uh-huh. So those booms were right there within the island?
That's right.
Okay.
They were formed there. They were islands, no question about it, but they were made more usable by using all of the first cut off in the log. They usually, when the log went through, they moved the log through the big saw,
mm-hmm.
and that first cut, that was cut off, and then they laid that along the bank, like here,
uh-huh.
all edgings, they called them.
Yes, right, okay, I've heard of that.
And that made a whole neat, like a dock. That's where they finally took the DA wells and put it in one of those little places and tied it there.
Uh-huh.
But that wasn't good enough. We kids got there, and the ropes were still on the mast that supported the mast, mm-hmm. and the what do they call it, the sprint, the pole that goes out of the front of the boat.
Oh, yes, right. You're right, bowsprit.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I would get a hold of one of those ropes, give it a good leap off in that bowsprit, and we'd go all the way around that, hanging onto that rope until we landed on that bowsprit on the way to turn back to it.
Now, when you said they put it there, it was all through. The boat was all through.
Yep. A boat to rock. I'll show you a picture of it. Something.
Okay.
At this point, Jay Nyhoff left the room and went out to get an album, an old traditional black paged album with the pictures stuck on it with white print, and fun to listen to him. He had not lost his enthusiasm for the interview. In fact, he was just getting going, even though the end of the tape was coming up. But he'll come back into the room now and we'll begin to discuss the album of photos. And let's listen in now.
This,
oh, yeah.
This is the boat. See, see, this,
this, that's the island now that we're looking
at. Yeah, the boat. Now, it's tied up to this. This is right across the boat. This is it over here. I got the picture of the boat in Marty's Day Congress.
Sure.
You don't remember that?
City Hall. I sure do. Oh, and the Episcopal. What church is that? Is that the Congregational Church? Yes.
And this is the steeple.
Yeah.
Hanging
well, look
in
at that.
In the air. And it dropped right down alongside the sidewalk. It made a whole brook sidewalk.
They were tearing it down.
Yeah. Bill.
I thought it burned down.
No. Bill Keith.
Yeah.
Went up there and sawed all these off and must have got clear up in the stable in the point here and got a rope on it. And they threw that rope and some of the fellows got across the street and pulled on there and gave it one jerk. And the whole thing just flipped over like this here, and it hung upside down right here. And the spar on it was, I think, about a 3-inch iron, solid iron. And that went right through there, and it's in there today, I think.
It stepped right down in the pavement?
Yeah, right in the sidewalk.
Oh, in the sidewalk, yeah. That is something. So this boat just laid there until it finally rotted away.
And this right here is where they get the gasoline tanks are today.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right
yeah.
on top. Huh. Huh. Yeah,
it's quite an album.
Yeah, that tells you.
Yeah, now I had thought, I had heard about that church. In fact, right in front of the fire barn now,
yeah.
in the lawn, yeah. they have Congregational Church, the plaque, yeah. or the stone.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it was Lauda who supported the church almost uh-huh. completely.
Uh-huh. And after he was gone, it kind of lost its founding father.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like you were you remember the lumbering days, do you?
No, not very much. Uh-huh. I can remember the last the raft of logs that came down the river.
Uh-huh.
And I could have drowned because of it.
Uh-huh.
I was with my uncle in a little duck boat, and it was dark. We hunted until the subjective couldn't see that. We could see, hear them or see them, we could shoot duck. And
you got a few there.
Yeah, they were all rabbits and pheasants. We had the houseboat up the river that we pulled up on the shore,
uh-huh.
and we stayed there for a week in the spring, a week in the fall, and there was the fishing over all pickerel that we caught in the This is my little duck boat that we went up there.
Now, is this in the Spoonville area?
No, this is way up there by Millard Flat.
Oh, okay, yeah. And so we end this interview with J. Nyhoff Poole. This was on March 3rd, 1989, as I had previously said, March 4th. It actually was March 3rd. You may have gathered he had many facets to his life, none the least of which was his hunting and fishing experiences on the bayous and on the booms on the island. And he also said, I would like to have a whole tape about the lumbering era. And maybe one of these days we'll do that. But we'll sign off now and finish off this tape.
Bend of Millhouse Bay.
Potato Island?
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of Potato Island.
That's where we had the